Welcome back to YPN, your property podcast. My name is Michelle Kearns, and today we've got Mark Winship with us. Hi, Mark.
Hi, Michelle. How are you?
Great, thank you. It's great to have you on. And I'm just going to just do a quick intro for people who don't know about you already. So, Mark, you are a property developer, coach, and hospitality expert. You built a multi-million pound property portfolio, and you are the owner of Gateway Accommodation and Stay New Forest, which are operating apart hotels, holiday lets, and serviced apartments across the UK. You're also the founder of Net Gain Club, sporting a very apt hoodie there for anyone watching us on the YouTube channel, which is an innovative community for property investors, as well as also hosting the podcast, The Secret Service Podcast, with your wife, Caroline, in which you lift the lid on your inner workings of the hospitality business. So we're talking about hospitality today and service accommodation, all these things, which is obviously still a very hot topic in the property world. That's quite a lot to manage, all of those things.
Yeah, there's a lot going on, a lot of plates spinning. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So first of all, rather than kind of going back to, you know, when you were born and all of that and the journey, let's dive right in. So you've got quite a few different strategies there within, you know, some people just kind of focus on one particular area. Certainly for people who are looking at, you know, apart hotels, that might be more than enough to handle. for any operator, but you've got quite a mix there. So how did that come about? Was it always intentional to diversify, or did that happen by accident?
Yeah, I guess broadly it all sort of comes under the headline of serviced accommodation, I guess, if you want to try and categorize it. But yeah, I mean, it's kind of happened as a natural evolution, but it was certainly always the intention since we launched our serviced accommodation business at the back end of 2018, just going into 2019, that we intended to scale. That was always the plan. We intended to grow that side of the business. And we built a lot of the systems and processes with that in mind. So we built in a lot of stretch in our elastic from day one. We started really quite small. We started with a couple of essentially rent-to-rent units, rent-to-service accommodation units, just really to sort of test the concept, get our systems up and running, but also get a feel for the demand in the area where we were investing, because we had another a project that we were just teeing up, which was a development of 6 apartments. And at that point, we always had the alternative second exit of renting them out on a buy-to-let, or even chopping up the leases and selling them. But serviced accommodation was always something we'd aspired to get into. We started it out in HMOs, actually. So back in 2016, we built a portfolio of HMOs. But I've always quite liked the entrepreneurial side of service accommodation, and the hands-on element of that doesn't necessarily faze me, although sometimes I regret saying that when we've got, you know, guests knocking on our door and, you know, issues flaring up. But no, I quite like the sort of hands-on side of it and the business side of it. And it kind of grew from there, really. So we took on a number of multi-unit blocks, I guess you'd call them, sort of combining our buy, refurbish, refinance experience from the HMO world, but then using serviced accommodation as the exit. And it's kind of scaled from there. We've used it to then move into other areas of the country, particularly areas where we like to spend a bit of time. And that's one of the things I like about serviced accommodation and holiday lets as a strategy, is it gives you a foot in the door for nice places to visit as well. It's a nice little perk. And yeah, it was in 2020, bizarrely during the heat of lockdown, that we purchased our first apart hotel, and we've kind of been focused around that side of the strategy ever since.
Oh, okay. Well, that's a lot that you mentioned there. Yeah. I just want to pick up on just the sort of throwaway comments about being entrepreneurial, and how that's, you know, you see it as one of the main differences between operating a HMO business with service accommodation. And I think it's one thing that sometimes people miss. It's, you know, it's either HMOs or SA, as if they're both kind of a similar business model. But they are quite distinct. So it's interesting you've got experience of both then. So how do you see the difference in operating the SA business over HMOs?
I see them as being really quite different, actually. So HMOs, very much a property strategy. There are similar principles, I guess, in terms of maximizing the income from a particular unit, if you like. You know, a property being a box that makes money. You know, an HMO is a way of trying to optimize that. And really, I guess we've kind of carried that logic through to things like apart hotels, which is the same principle but turbocharged, if you like. But service accommodation is almost not a property strategy at all. It's a business. It's a hospitality business, and that's what I say to anyone who's looking to get into it. You need to understand that this is not a set it and leave it. This is not a passive kind of recurring income strategy. That the potential for very high cash flow is definitely there, but you certainly need to work for it. Now, don't get me wrong, as we have done, you can certainly build your systems and build your team to make sure that you're not the one that's necessarily dealing with the guest day to day and involved in all the inner workings, but certainly in those early days, it's a very hands-on strategy. It's very active, and I think people need to get into service accommodation with their eyes open from that point of view. Otherwise, they're potentially in for a bit of a shock. But equally, the flip side of that is the positives is, you know, my experience from HMOs. I'm sure people will be able to relate to this, is quite often you only really hear from them when things are going wrong, right? So you hear when the boiler's on the blink or there's some management issue. Whereas at least with service accommodation, don't get me wrong, sometimes we have challenging guests to deal with, but equally there are lots of very rewarding moments, you know, where we've been able to make a real difference and guests have had a great stay, and you get a lot of positive reinforcement as well. So ups and downs, I guess, but it's certainly more active.
Yeah, as you say, that's more suited to somebody who wants to be more of an entrepreneur and on hands-on and work with the business and growing the business, whereas HMOs can certainly be more passive.
Yeah.
So that's interesting. And have you kind of parked the HMOs for now and just focusing on growing the SA side of things, or are you
Pretty
still looking
much.
to invest in both?
I wouldn't discount still investing in HMOs. We are actually looking at some potential HMO options at the moment. So I wouldn't, but that's exactly how that fits within our thinking, is that, you know, if we're looking for a more passive strategy where we're looking to potentially still get the benefits of buy, refurbish, refinance, but then get a passive income stream to sit alongside the serviced accommodation, then HMOs would probably be the way we would look to go. But as it currently stands, we're certainly all in on the serviced accommodation business. We've got one HMO still from the previous portfolio, but the rest of that portfolio we did actually sell on and consolidate in order to invest more in particularly the apart hotel strategy, which is really our main focus at the moment. So we've got two apart hotels that we, well, one of them we own, one of them we've currently got on a lease option, and then we manage an apart hotel as well on behalf of other landlords. So we've got three hotels currently operating, yeah, that's really an exciting future for us as a company, I think, is to do more in that space.
And how do you see for a lot of people coming into the service accommodation sort of arena, the strategy, they're thinking, okay, this sounds great and I don't mind being hands-on, because I actually enjoy, well, I want to do something I enjoy, and I think I would enjoy managing a business and being in control of my own finances and business and money and etc. So with the serviced accommodation, how do you see it's going to pan out with the next 12 months, 24 months, with potential changes that are on the horizon? Is it still going to be a viable strategy and business model?
I think so. I mean, it's changed a lot even within the relatively short space of time that we've been doing it. You know, there's a lot of people that have sort of flooded to the market. I'm sure there are a lot of training courses out there that have been pushing SA for quite some time now. And I never really liked the term saturation. I think ultimately saturation, you know, is something that we need to factor into our due diligence, but ultimately it's about differentiating yourself from the competition. But having said that, you know, when with a strategy as fluid as something like service accommodation, where your nightly rates can change almost on a daily basis, then the impact of having, a lot of competition in the area can have quite an immediate effect on the rates that you're able to achieve at different times a year. So it's changed a lot over the last few years, but it was always likely that regulation would come into the service accommodation industry, just the way it did in HMOs. And actually, the likelihood is nobody knows, nobody has a crystal ball yet. But the likelihood is it will follow a very similar kind of format as the HMO legislation. So there'll almost be two sides to it. There'll be the licensing stroke accreditation side, which is certainly nothing that a professional operator needs to be overly concerned about. If anything, I would welcome that sort of change within the industry, because I think it professionalizes things and it allows us to differentiate ourselves from the kind of surface surfing origin sofa surfing. Did I get the wrong way around? Sofa surfing origins of things like Airbnb. So I think that's welcome. But then the likelihood is as well that they are going to introduce, and we don't know when. There's been a government consultancy that's happened, and we're waiting to hear the outcomes of that. But almost certainly they'll introduce a planning use class specifically for holiday lets and serviced accommodation, because currently councils just don't know what to do with it. They don't know how to place it, they don't know how to treat it, and every council is different in how they end up going about it. So again, a bit of standardization wouldn't go amiss. And I think ultimately that's going to create opportunities. That's certainly the way that we looked at HMO licensing when it came in. And yeah, I'm quite interested to see the impact that that will have on the industry. But I certainly think for professional operators who are going into it with their eyes open and they understand the legislation and what it means, I think there are potentially big opportunities. And I'm not going to lie, it's one of the reasons that we have, well, there's many reasons why we love the apart hotel strategy, but that's certainly one of them, is that it sits already within its own planning use class, and to a certain extent is safeguarded against that sort of legislation that might come in.
Definitely, absolutely. Well, in terms of, you mentioned before about saturation and setting yourself apart, how do you operate differently, do you think, because you want to set yourself apart and provide, that I'm assuming you're going for those 5-star reviews and you want to offer the best service. So what do you do differently?
It depends very much on the target market, actually. I mean, obviously, there's an element of setting yourself apart with the way that you, the type of property that you're bringing to the market, and the way that you present it. I think the days of a grey feature wall and some mustard coloured furniture, accent furniture, as being enough to really stop people scrolling on sites like Airbnb, that's probably long gone, and it really is about now, really going to town on the kind of interior design and how you're staging the property and making sure you've got professional photography. All of these things that help you just stand out in that search listing. But then the flip side of it is your service as well. And it comes down to your professional service. And I'm really fascinated by how you go about systemizing the personalization of things. Because obviously, we would all love to be able to give each of our guests go above and beyond and offer them a really real personal service and find out why they're staying and leave them gifts and whatever it might be. But realistically, if you're going to scale a business, we're operating 59 units currently. That suddenly becomes a lot more challenging. So it's how you can set up your systems and build a team where you're able to at least give the impression to every guest that stays in every one of your properties that they feel well taken care of. They feel like they've had the personal touch, and that although you are running a hands-off remote business, it doesn't feel like that to the end user, if you like.
Yeah, I think that's important, getting the balance right. I remember listening to a podcast from the founders of Airbnb, actually, and they were talking about creating the 15-star experience and, make a list of all the things that they could possibly do. And while it's probably not realistic, for most people to, and certainly in the scaling stage, there are things that we can do to stand out as well. So How does the client feel like they've getting a personal touch when you've got so many units?
Yeah.
And I imagine most of your operations are standardized now.
Yeah, so again, I go back to the point I was making about target market, because we cater to a number of different target markets depending on the location of the property, the type of the property. So we've got some service apartments and our hotels as well, which are very much working stays, and therefore, going to town on elaborate soft furnishings and a real luxury welcome pack, you're probably you're overplaying it there. It's not required, but what they do require is super fast Wi-Fi, a really seamless check-in process. They need to be able to get hold of you whenever they need you, but without having someone fussing around them all the time. They need to be recommended, ideally hand-picked places to eat and order food and stuff like that, because they're dropping into the area for a work contract and they need to be able to just pick it up as if they live there. So that's, for me, I think when people think about personalization, they think about the sort of the glamorous side and the luxury hampers and that side of things. But sometimes personalization is about just understanding what does your target market actually need from their stay. And then we have the luxury holiday let end, which is very much that. It's about experiences. And I think we recently set up a new holiday let management company down in the New Forest called Stay New Forest. And I think what we've quickly realized is that there are lots of lovely places to stay in places like the New Forest and other leisure locations around the country. But really, what's going to make the difference is how you're able to add value to the experience that they have on their holiday. And if you can link your brand to the memories that they've created, then that's your best chance of getting kind of repeat custom and people coming back to you and that side of thing. So we're putting a lot of time and effort into linking with local suppliers. We offer all sorts of upsells and experiences to our guests in our luxury holiday lets, from cycling tours of the forest to foraging experiences to private chefs. So almost it gets to the point where the accommodation is secondary to creating the whole experience for them.
Yeah, I think there's two distinct parts, isn't there? There's the advert that people first see, and they need to be attracted to that by what it looks like and the reviews. And then there's the experience once they're there. And I love this idea that you just said there about linking memories to your brand. That's very powerful, I'm
Absolutely.
sure. So just picking up there on what you said about the different guest profiles that you have, and they're very different if somebody's, I suppose, having a holiday in the leisure in in the New Forest versus a contractor in a different location. So with new properties that you're looking for, are you looking first for the demand and the type of
Yeah.
guest, or do you look for the property first and then see what who can stay?
It's a bit of both. Generally speaking, it's demand driven. So we will have researched the area. We'll have understood in quite a level of detail, both in terms of our own common sense research, as it were, but also through analyzing some of the data and using data analysis tools as to who's coming to the area and why. And that will largely drive our strategy for that area. It's not always quite, it doesn't work quite as seamlessly as that sometimes with apart hotels, because obviously it's a much less competitive market, and the market isn't flooded with hotels for sale. So sometimes opportunities come up where it's in a new area, but the property itself ticks all the boxes that we would look for for our apart hotel model. But then the due diligence process is exactly the same. So we just reverse engineer that to see if the area has enough demand to warrant us, taking the plunge and taking on a big project like that. So I would say essentially it's demand driven. And I'd always say make sure you understand who's coming to the area and why, who are the big employers. Are there universities and hospitals and airports and conference centers? We tend to like prefer to operate where there is a mixture of target markets, where you've got the staple kind of working stays, taking care of your Monday to Thursday, if you like, with the opportunity to then generate some profit at the weekends with leisure stays. So that's kind of essentially what we're looking for. But yeah, I think understanding the area in terms of demand is your number one thing to get right.
And do you have a preference on the target markets, whether it's contractors, like longer term stays, or leisure that perhaps pay more but are less frequent?
Yeah, I mean, we've got great examples of both, and there are pros and cons to both, definitely. Personally, I prefer to actually, there's a slight middle ground there. We don't actually do too many contractor digs, as it were. We tend to be more working stays, kind of white collar, engineers, corporate travel, that side of things. So I quite like it where there's a strong market for that, where, as I said, you've got hospitals is a great one. Universities, not for the student market itself, but for kind of visiting lecturers and graduations and that sort of thing. So I like that sort of market because I feel like that reduces the seasonality. High leisure, if you like. It takes you have to be certain that the demand exists and that you understand how to work your numbers, because there are going to be times a year potentially when things are really quite quiet, and that can catch you off guard if you've gone into it with rose-tinted glasses and thought, well, I can get X amount per week in the middle of July and August, but forgetting what the depths of November and February are going to be like.
And you mentioned that there's if you can get that mix of having leisure at the weekend and contractors or white collar during the week, that's the ideal. But how do you cater for both in one property? Because I imagine there are two very different needs from different guest profiles.
Yeah, they sort of, it's a bit like a Venn diagram, isn't it? They kind of meet in the middle, but there's the luxury end of things wouldn't cross over with your working stays. That's a whole different product, a whole different service. But there's certainly a crossover with sort of working stays and family stays. For example, we've got service departments that during the week do a really good trade with. We're near a regional airport in the Midlands, so pilots and air traffic crew, and all of the engineers and people that go around supporting the infrastructure around an airport and something of that size. But then at the weekends, well, certainly we get long bookings that obviously go through for a number of weeks or even months, but also we fill weekends through people visiting family. And to be honest, as much as we really learn our target market inside out within the areas that we operate, it never ceases to amaze me the reasons that people have to stay in serviced accommodation. There's just when we think we've seen it all, we get a lot of insurance jobs. So where people have had floods, well, that's a hot topic, isn't it, at the moment? Had flooded properties or having building work done, and they need to move out for a few days or even a couple of weeks. There's a huge variety of reasons why people use serviced accommodation, and that isn't necessarily something you can build your business model around. You can't bank on getting those random stays, but equally, if you're promoting it well and if you're marketing it well, then you will be able to tap into some markets you hadn't probably expected.
And for the example of the insurance, would you just receive a request from the guest to stay, or would you be dealing directly with the insurance company?
Both. Typically, it comes from the guest, and then we pick up with them direct. But we have used that in the past as a way to find out who the loss adjuster was that they were working with, and we've made contact with the loss adjuster. We haven't got a huge amount from that route, but we've certainly built some relationships there. And I think that's an interesting avenue for people to look at, so that you can actually. I don't know. The way I understand it is there's not like a sort of registered database that they can add you to as such, but it's certainly worth building those sort of relationships.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you say, so many different reasons for people to be staying. And how do you think you've obviously, got a couple of years of experience and looked at this historically. How do you see the shift from people staying in the traditional hotel or even the B&B into this more serviced accommodation that's not, there's no one kind of serving them breakfast there, but they have got their own space and their own facilities for cooking.
Again, it's very much related to the target market, I think. But I definitely see, particularly within working stays, people are, when they're traveling for work these days, they're very budget conscious. They're also very conscious, I guess, like COVID's had a bit of a part to play in this, but they're very conscious of their own space. I know we had a group of engineers actually that booked one of our serviced houses. Oh, we're going back a good 18 months or so now, who basically, I met them outside the property actually. A rare example that I actually went out to a property myself to meet with them. I think there was an issue with a lockbox and I happened to be in the area. And I got chatting to them, and they could essentially have just written our marketing material for us, because they were saying, oh, this is absolutely, they hadn't even walked through the front door yet. This is absolutely ideal for us because our company books our accommodation. They move us around from pillar to post. We're bouncing around different hotels. The novelty factor of eating out when you're working away from home, I think that wears off pretty quickly. They just want somewhere to crash where they can make a bit of food, relax in their own space, but have that flexibility of space that you're not basically living out of a suitcase and sitting on a hotel bed and that sort of thing. So I think there is and continues to be a really strong demand for that side of things. Equally, going into the apart hotel space, that's obviously a market we're really trying to tap into. You've got the convenience and the flexibility of a hotel format, but we've got self-catering facilities, we've got laundry facilities that make it suitable for longer stays. But then for some people, and they are the minority, but there are some people that still need help, if you like. You need to educate them on the model, because they turn up to a hotel expecting their room to be turned over every day and expecting someone at reception that can just nip up and help them with something. So we have to find ways of replicating that service without, all of our facilities are remotely managed. We don't have staff on site at any of them. So that can be a challenge. But yeah, I think that's where the demand is for that flexible space, particularly people who need to travel together and share. Booking multiple hotel rooms is difficult. Whereas if they can split the cost of a house, then it just makes it so much more cost effective.
True. And mentioning systems there, presumably you've kind of got the systems in place, surely, to have that many number of units, that the systems are kind of ticking over. I'm curious, have you looked into any developments with AI at the moment? Because there seems to be an AI bot popping up on every website now. Has that changed? Or are you seeing that kind of coming in? I know it's still early days, but do you see that that's going to make a difference to what you do?
I think so. I think we'd all be mad to ignore the developments in AI, and I think it's really exciting. We can get into the existential debate, if we like, about whether it's
Terminator.
going to be the end of humanity. But for now, I think we should probably focus on the benefits, and we're certainly buying into AI in a big way. So we use AI at the moment for actually our internal operations. So we have a task manager and scheduling tool that is essentially AI driven, and it creates project collaborations and task management kind of calendars for all of our staff, and that's largely AI driven. We're using AI. We haven't completely made the switch to AI guest communications. I know there's already some early adopter kind of stuff out there where you can have AI chatbots and this, that, and the other. We've not made the plunge yet, because for the moment, that personal touch and that service that we offer, we want to keep that, well, delivered by a human essentially, but we want to keep that in-house for now. But I'm certainly open-minded to it, and I'm certainly keeping a very close eye on those developments, because I think it's really quite exciting. We use AI quite a lot for writing copy, for writing material that might go on the website, blog material, all of this sort of stuff. So I think it's a really exciting space, and it's going to be really intriguing to see where we are in another year or 2 years' time, to see how much AI has had an impact.
Yeah, certainly is fast tracking a lot of people who are using it, that's for sure.
Yeah,
And so on that then, where do you think, at the speed that things are changing at the moment, the next, let's say, 12 months, what do you think that holds for the industry?
well, it's going to be interesting because you could make a case for two almost completely different directions. Almost inevitably, AI will become integrated into things like serviced accommodation. It's already happening. We're already seeing. I was ordering something off the internet the other day, and it was pretty obvious that the chat bot that I was speaking to was AI driven. That's almost becoming part of our reality very, very quickly, and I think it's really exciting to see how efficient we run a very lean machine already. We've got 59 units, as I said, including three hotels, and we're a team of four people, and only three of those really hands-on in the day-to-day operations. So we're already of that mindset where leveraging systems and technology is helping us to be super efficient, and AI is only going to add to that. On the flip side, there's an argument that actually people will become a bit what's the word, like have AI hangover, if you like, and will really relish the personal touch and the human touch. And I think the whole experiences side of things is, I think, is going to become a really, really big thing over the next few years. It's going to become a lot more than just about taking your property and sticking it on Airbnb and trying to make some cash. I think it's about creating an entire experience, and whether or not we can leverage AI to help with that. But I think the personal touch and making people feel like they are being looked after and taken care of, I think will also be an outcome of the whole AI revolution.
Yeah, I agree for both.
Yeah.
It's exciting times, that's for sure. And business-wise, going forward, what's next for you?
More in the apart hotel space for sure. As I said, we've got an apart hotel down in Somerset that we currently have a lease option. So we are busy optimizing that at the moment and getting that up and running with a view to purchasing that in the next few months, hopefully, to add to the portfolio. But I think for us, that space is really quite interesting because there are, well, we know what COVID did to the hospitality industry. It pretty much brought it to its knees. I really do feel for a lot of guest house owners, B&B owners that are running it as a lifestyle business and were living on site at the property, because most of them had to close their business for 12 to 30 months, lost their livelihoods. The relatively modest hospitality grants will probably have just, if they kept it afloat, probably just pushed the can down the road a little bit further. And we saw some immediate casualties from that, some bed and breakfasts and guest houses coming to the market. And I think we're probably only just seeing the beginning of that, because a lot of these businesses have had to try and run uninterrupted for a year or two after COVID before they can even contemplate exiting on their own terms. And that's exactly the kind of property that we're looking for, is we're looking for a guest house or a B&B where the owners have been living on site. So the space from an income perspective is incredibly under optimized. We convert the owner's accommodation, we convert all the ancillary spaces into more lettable space, and then we operate it as a smart hotel that we manage remotely. So that's a model that I think still has a huge amount of legs in it. So I think that's gonna be our focus, more opportunities in that space over the next couple of years.
Yeah, absolutely. And any particular locations, just in case anyone's listening and got.
Well, I can tell you where we're currently operating, because it's always good to, where you've already got the systems and the team in place. So we're down in Southampton and the New Forest. So we've got stuff around there, and we do manage on behalf of other landlords as well, as I mentioned. So if anyone is in those areas and needs a helping hand, so we're down there. We're also over in Somerset, in Yeovil currently. And then we've got a portfolio where I'm currently sat now in the East Midlands, so around East Midlands Airport, sort of in the Golden Triangle of Derby, Nottingham, and Leicester, kind of sat within that. So, but equally, when it comes to an apart hotel, usually when you're looking at a new area, It's tough to just take on a single unit because you've got to replicate an entire cleaning team, maintenance team, etc. But an apart hotel essentially represents, let's say, 15, 16, 20 plus units. So it's a good enough reason to take a look at a new area and build a business around it. So we would look at any opportunity like that. But yeah, that's the areas we're in currently.
Right. All right. Well, if anyone knows of anything, then you can get in
Thank you.
touch with Mark. It's probably a good place to wrap up. So, we mentioned the podcast at the beginning. Do you want to just tell people where they can find out a bit more about yourself and the podcast?
Yeah, it's been an interesting journey, the podcast, because I used to run a more I'm going to call it a more conventional podcast, whereas actually it's called the Secret Service Podcast. I run it with my wife Caroline, and we have a number of our team that input into that as well. And it was based around a slightly different concept, really, which was us just completely lifting the lid on all the inner workings of a hospitality business. So imagine 40 towers, imagine various challenges that we have with guests and the ups and the downs and the roller coaster. We literally tell it all. It's a very it's not really a it's not an overtly educational podcast, although it's great to hear that people take a lot of nuggets from it. It's more about showing people what is actually involved in running serviced accommodation and holiday lets. So it's called the Secret Service Podcast, and you can get it wherever you listen to podcasts, Spotify, Apple, etc.
Sounds like a good therapy session as well.
Very much so. It is for us.
Exactly. No, it's great. We've got lots of members of our community within our training communities for service accommodation, so I'll be sure to point them in that direction as well. And we put all the links to everything you've mentioned in the show notes. So great. Thank you so much for your time today, Mark. It's been really interesting and great to see, what can be achieved in just a short period of time if you've got the, as you say, the entrepreneurial flair and the passion for, growing a business on this scale. So congratulations.
Thank you so much, Michelle. Thank you for having me on the podcast.
It's been a pleasure. And thank you for everyone who's listening. And we will put the links in the show notes. Also, remember to click the link for your free 30-day trial to the YPM magazine. And we'll see you next time, guys.